Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 156 with Chris Nessie. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Chris Nessie, we explore a number of interesting topics like the origin story of the Education Podcast Network. Are you looking for tools that are knocking down the walls of the classroom and getting kids comfortable with tech and innovative learning? Today's podcast upgrade is Questions to Evaluate Tech Resources. You can download it at betterleadersbetterschools.com/156-Chris-Nessie or click the podcast upgrade link in the show notes page. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving student soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I'm excited today to connect with an old friend and the freaking founder of the Education Podcast Network. He's like my granddaddy in some respects. So I'm excited to talk with Chris Nessie today. And Chris is a certified in social studies and supervision and has inspired students and teachers at the middle, high school, and collegiate levels. Technology and its role in education are his professional passion. Chris is on the cutting edge of education technology trends, and he is a creative, detail-oriented, and tech-savvy educator who is never short on innovative ideas, energy, and the desire to get involved in a school community. He has developed and presented professional development workshops to K-12 and collegiate educators and personnel about social media, connected learning, tech integration, and podcasting. New technologies are always becoming available, and Chris enjoys expanding educators' understanding and use of these innovations for personal and professional use. Chris is a very active member in the use and growth of his professional learning network, which allows him to share thoughts and ideas with others and contribute to the many conversations happening in the world of education and technology. Chris hosts the House of EdTech podcast, which explores how technology is changing the way teachers teach and the impact that technology is having in the world of education. He's also a co-host of the Podcast PD podcast and founder of the Education Podcast Network. Chris, welcome to the show.
Daniel Bauer, Danny Sunshine Bauer, Alien Earbud. I am really excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure. I'm glad that we made this happen. And first, before we get too deep into the show, thanks so much for creating the Education Podcast Network. And I figured that'd be a great place to start to hear the genesis story of starting that network.
Well, the genesis story is really simple. When I started the House of EdTech, like opening a tube of Pringles, once you pop, you just can't stop. And one podcast wasn't enough. Now, not having all the time in the world to create, even to do my own show on a weekly basis or to host multiple shows, I wanted to connect with other people who were podcasting and doing an education-based podcast. I wanted to connect with other educators who were doing the same thing and had similar interests and passions in creating content and sharing it with the world. Hence, the Education Podcast Network. You are, like in the NHL, you're like one of the original six members of the network.
Oh, wow.
So this is like the core right here.
Starting lineup then, huh?
Absolutely.
Put me in, coach. I was going to ask you that because I don't remember how we connected initially, but then a lot of Voxer conversations and Twitter, of course, and back when Blab was still going and that kind of thing. But that was like 2015, I want to say. I didn't realize I was a part of the original six.
Yeah. Or, I mean, whether it's 8, 9, or 10, but you were, a core member. I've been listening to this podcast since it debuted. And again, we connected probably first on Blab and then, through Voxer. And, you've always been, a positive influence on me as an educator. And, I can safely say you've made a difference in me as an educator and the guests you're putting on. I've learned a lot about leadership and, not just in education. So thank you.
Oh, man, this is the least I can do.
Hi, I'm Chris Nessie from the House of EdTech podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. And make sure to check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And now, the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Let me ask you, so in terms of the podcast network, what have been some of the highlights of forming this group?
I'd say first and foremost, it's really just been the ability to connect with people like you, like Jennifer Gonzalez, Matt Miller, Casey Bell, all of these people who I idolize in education and people who are what I think are at the forefront of educational pedagogy and putting out great content. I've been able to have conversations with all of you. And that in and of itself is priceless.
And where would you say the EPN Education Podcast Network is going in the next, I don't know, 2-3 years or so?
I would love to continue to be able to classify it as the premier place for people to get the best in education podcasts. I get a lot of people who reach out to me and are always asking, you know, how can I become a part of this? And to be honest, it's really subjective because it is purely my opinion. So I'm the one who is, you know, listening to a lot of different podcasts. I get a lot of people who haven't started their podcast yet and they're interested in becoming part of, you know, what we do and just being able to connect like I was. I can't let those people in because they don't have a podcast yet. But then there have been some people where it's like, I have what I feel is a certain standard of content creation and quality. So I want to see it continue to grow. I believe right now as we record this, we have 20 or 22 podcasts that are affiliated, and I would certainly love to see it continue to grow.
Yeah, it's been an absolute, you know, honor to be a part of the group and so much fun, you know, creating content and seeing everybody's shows improve, you know, as we continue to figure out how to do this art form and create content that's going to be inspiring people, helping people out. So we talked a bit about the Education Podcast Network. If somebody's listening for the first time or they're in, you know, an older podcast listener, but they didn't realize that this network existed, where could they go to find out more about all our shows?
They are going to want to head over to edupodcastnetwork.com. And over there, they're going to find, and we know I like to say this, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. So that's the place to be. And, you know, we're on Twitter at edupodnet. So connect, follow, get access to people's show notes and continue to grow and learn anywhere, anytime, on the go.
So you're a leader, you know, in the podcast network, you're a leader in podcasting, you're a leader in your school, in your classroom. What are some of those qualities that have really helped you lead at a high level and impact a lot of people over the years?
The things that have helped me do that effectively are things that even right now, as I talk with you, I'm not done growing and learning. So some of the skills that I employ are, you know, effective communication, being compassionate and understanding, and being willing to collaborate with other people. And those are things that right now, as I talk to you, I do them to a certain extent, and they're better than I did them, you know, 2, 3, 7 years ago. But I know that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, I will be an even more effective communicator and have an even better understanding of the people that I interact with and continue to develop that desire to collaborate and create with other people. So those are, I think, the three core skills that have gotten me to where I am.
And on this show, I love to talk about routines and rituals that help people have an impactful day. So is there any type of morning routine or ritual or evening winding down routine or ritual that really helps you be effective?
I think this is the thing where maybe the person who's listening will say, aw, or that's kind of snappy.
Okay.
But each day before I leave, I always make sure to kiss my wife and my children and hug them and tell them I love them before I leave the house, because I know that that happens every day. But there are some days based on, you know, teaching in high school or what I do at the collegiate level, or if I'm going to conferences, I don't always get the chance to do that at the end of each day. My youngest son, he's in bed, you know, as we record this, he's in bed at like 5:30. My oldest, who's 5, is in bed by 6:30. And my wife, sometimes she's in bed by 8. And I get a lot of time in the evenings to, you know, do the podcasting and, you know, continue to learn. But each day I make sure to tell them that I love them and hug them and kiss them. So that way, when I'm not there, they still know that I'm there.
In terms of unplugging from work, is that something that you're able to do? And if you are, how do you do it? And if you don't unplug from work, what's the challenge there?
From my day job, yes, I unplug, because as a classroom teacher, I'm not inundated with a lot of the maybe email correspondence that, you know, a supervisor or a building administrator might have to deal with and work with, you know, during the day and after quote unquote school has ended. So I'm not fielding a lot of that, you know, conversation. So that's easy. What I do struggle with in terms of unplugging is, you know, being a connected educator, wanting to participate in Twitter chats or have conversations, you know, even like this with you for a podcast or for my own podcast. It's finding the time to say no to some of those things. And I'm glad I said yes to you, Daniel. So please don't be upset.
Thank you.
But that's where I struggle to unplug. You know, when I'm at home, I need to put the iPad down. I need to not be on Instagram. And like I said, you know, I love my wife and children, but sometimes I get distracted when they're right there in front of me by my technology. And that's something that I do struggle with. And I would readily say that it is an addiction, you know, and I'm probably not the only one who feels that way, but that's what I struggle with. But I'm getting better.
You know, when you brought up Instagram, I'm just curious, have you seen podcasters using that platform well in terms of promoting their show? Or maybe we should take it, you know, for the listeners, let's keep them in mind. Have you seen some schools that are really effectively using Instagram to tell their school's story?
Individual schools, I know that they're out there, but that's purely based on the fact that there are a lot of principals and classroom teachers who are leveraging Instagram in a positive way to give that visual peek into the classroom, or they're using Instagram stories. Back earlier this year in 2018, I had Lindsay Stumpenhorst on the House of EdTech, and she's a school principal from the Midwest, Illinois, Chicago area. And I got to speak to her about how she, as an elementary school principal, leverages Instagram. And I learned a lot from her. And, you know, having that conversation taught me a lot. And through the power of podcasting, you know, that episode is also out there. For those that want to check it out, that's episode 103 of the House of Ed Tech. And Daniel, if I could plug a future guest, you need to go and connect with Lindsay Stumpenhorst and have her on your show too.
Yeah, for sure. We're always having conversations through Instagram and Voxer as well. So she's somebody that I want to connect with and continue to want to. She started her own podcast as well. It's not education focused. I think it's more her and her husband and what they're learning about parenting. But she was going to be on the Moms as Principals show. Something came up, so she couldn't make it. But Lindsay, if you're listening, the offer is still out there. You could come on the show.
I'll help push her your way as well.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And so in terms of the House of EdTech show, you know, people could get a general sense of it in terms of the title. But when folks listen to it, in case they're new to it, what are some of the things that they'll get out of it?
Well, first and foremost, there is obviously the ed tech element, because that is my professional passion, you know, using technology in education, whether it's to make my personal life easier, which obviously will have an impact on what I do in a school or in a classroom. But beyond the people that I speak with about education technology, and that's classroom teachers, administrators, I've also had a number of guests who they're the people behind the technology. So in addition to that, which is the core, there's also people get to know me. I, in my show, put myself out there and share stories brief or at length sometimes, you know, about what I'm doing personally. I also include, of course, a recommendation of some kind in each episode. And that's usually a tech tool or a tip that is either new to me and I want to really share because I'm excited about it, or it might be something tried and true that maybe hasn't gotten some love in a while. Of course, there's always the House of EdTech VIP, which is a little segment where I highlight somebody that I'm connected with or newly connected with that other people would find value in either, you know, emailing or tweeting or checking out their content. And one of the other parts is my EdTech thought, which is kind of like I've used it in a number of different ways over the run of the podcast. Sometimes it's been about my perspective or opinion about something in education and technology. Sometimes it's just been technology. Sometimes it's been just my perspective on something in education. So it gives me that part of my show where I could do a little op-ed, you know?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And, you know, for folks that, again, they might be newer to your show, we talked about the content there. What are some, I don't know, some teaser tips, or let's give them some stuff that's going to attract them and become House of EdTech loyal listeners. So I'm just curious, yeah, some things that you've seen or you've come across that are really catapulting either schools or individual classes to a much higher level when it comes to instruction, you know, and learning. What are some of those tools that you've seen? And maybe they're underutilized, but it's just a thing of knowing that it's out there and available.
I would say rather than name any one specific tool, because, and you'll agree with me, Daniel, that education technology is changing all the time. I could recommend a tool today a week. Hey, you get a notice, we're shutting down. So rather than go specific, I would say people need to look for tools that knock down the walls of their classroom. Utilize tools as a teacher and put tools in the hands of your students things that will let them create, collaborate, and communicate with each other, because that's going to give them the skills that they need, whether they want to go to college or go right to their career, or when they eventually get to their career. You know, we've all heard, in 20 years, we're going to prepare the kids for jobs that don't exist yet. Well, let's just prepare them to be able to do a whole bunch of stuff and empower them. So look for tools that are going to promote video, audio, literacy, have the kids reading and writing, and really just do a lot of those basic things, and find the tools out there that are going to let the kids learn those soft and hard skills. But again, without getting specific, that's what we need to look for when we're evaluating a lot of the tools and websites that are out there for us to bring into the classroom.
I really appreciate that answer, because it's not the tool. Like you said, the tools are going to change, so that doesn't matter, but it's the mindset, it's the principles behind it. And I love that quote you just shared, are you knocking down the walls of the classroom? These tools should allow students to create, collaborate, and communicate. And I think if that's a principle and a guiding force for evaluating whatever tech tools you're going to use within district, school, or class level, that's a great place to start. I'm wondering, Chris, if you have any tips in terms of, not necessarily like, it may look like resistant educators, but it's more that they're scared, right? Scared of trying something new, scared of putting themselves out there into the internet or whatever, because they're using technology. And so for people that are a little more reluctant to try some of these new things, what approaches have you seen that are effective in getting them to really dig in and appreciate and understand and just enjoy adding technology to the school experience?
First and foremost, with the people who are in my immediate school, I do my best to lead by example. And my door is always open because I'm in the room. So I'm always inviting teachers to come in and see the tools I'm using, and teachers stop in. So they will see me using things like say Padlet or Adobe Spark, for the first or second time, or they're looking for a tool and I'll say, all right, I'll try it out. Come see me use it. And, I lead that way where they can actually see me do it and I'll answer their questions. I'll run optional or I'll volunteer my time to do PD sessions before, during lunch or after school. So that's one way. The other way is obviously through the podcast, I promote the idea of, using technology isn't difficult. Just try it. We're not going to break something like Google. And I tell people all the time, if you go out and you use Google Docs or spreadsheets or Google Keep, you're not going to break it. If you do find a way to break a tool like that, they're probably going to contact you and maybe offer you a job, because those tools aren't made to be broken. So I promote no fear, because what's the worst that happens? It doesn't work. We tell our students all the time, don't be afraid, fail forward, first attempt in learning, whatever, your motto is, that's what we preach to students. And we as adults don't do that a lot or enough. So you have to not be afraid to say, I don't know. And that's one of the favorite things I say to my kids all the time. I don't know. Let's look at it together. That's where I come from. That's at my core, is not being afraid.
Again, that's some more, just really interesting ideas that you're sharing there with the listener, that I don't know, let's figure it out together. It's so empowering, right? But it's also, I think, endearing for the student, or in the context of a school leader, with his or her staff, to say, I don't have it all figured out. Let's figure this out together. Let's do this as a team. I'm not this perfect leader without any faults or blemishes. And I really appreciate that approach, because going back to what you said earlier, that I think sets up that environment where folks can create, collaborate, and communicate, because it's not this top-down hierarchy, right? Where you have to get it right every single time. And like you said, fail forward, all this kind of stuff. You're creating a space where it makes it okay to play, to learn from mistakes, and to grow within the little atmosphere that you're creating, the environment that you're creating.
Absolutely. And if someday I find myself not in the classroom, maybe as a supervisor, or, I'm not going to hold my breath, as a principal or something like that, these are the skills that I'm using now that I would intend to use as a formal leader, I guess, somebody with a title. And it's at my core to, be human and connect and collaborate and communicate with the people around me. Right now, most of those people are students. And, the adults that I present to. But if I find myself in a position, I would certainly bring this to the table.
So I love this quote by Derek Sivers: what is ordinary to you is extraordinary to me. And so, Chris, what do you consider your superpower?
I have that written down. I'm just trying to find it.
A keen sense of organization.
I know. I took the questions and I got a nice outline. But well, Daniel, it goes right back to what I was saying about no fear. I'm not afraid as an educator. I'm not afraid to try technology. I'm not afraid to experiment with a new lesson or a teaching technique or strategy in my classroom. And the thing that my colleagues either laugh at or are most surprised by, I'm not afraid to have anybody come into my classroom, whether it's an administrator or a supervisor. It doesn't matter to me, because if I know you're coming or I don't know you're coming, I'm not putting on a show. You know, I'm not jumping through hoops. You know, whether I'm going to have an announced observation or an unannounced observation, you get Mr. Nessie doing his thing with his kids. And I'm transparent about that. And again, that stems from, I'm not afraid. Now, have I made mistakes? Absolutely. I've been coached. I'm coachable. You know, I'm more than ready to sit down with somebody who comes into my classroom and has recommendations or constructive criticism for what I'm trying or what I'm doing, but I'm not afraid to try. So that's my power. No fear, not afraid to try.
Do you find a lot of your colleagues accepting that open door policy and just coming in to watch and see what you're experimenting with in the classroom?
The ones that aren't in my room, they're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's cool. My in-class support teachers that I've worked with, they will often tell me, Chris, you're out of your mind. You invited who? I remember in the spring this year, I had my students do a cultural expo where, you know, for 8 block classes, they were researching different aspects of culture across multiple cultures and history. And I had them present not us up in the front of the classroom to everybody else, but kind of like a science fair or like an expo hall. And I invited the superintendent, the assistant superintendent, my building principal, all the VPs, my district supervisor for humanities, and invited them all. And my in-class support teacher was like, are you out of your mind? I'm like, no, I want them to come see, you know, what I'm trying and what the kids are actually doing with what I'm trying. And obviously the tech component was, I also attached a Google Hangout. So those that couldn't attend, they were able to over 2 days kind of check in via a Google Hangout as I walked around with my laptop live streaming this.
Oh, yeah.
So that was pretty cool.
That's super cool.
You know, I deal with that where they're like, what are you doing? You're crazy. And I'm like, hey, why not?
Exactly. Why not? And that's such a powerful question too, for leaders, for innovators, for risk takers, just asking why not? You know, why can't we? How do we, right? Whenever you're posed with some type of challenge that is right in front of you, asking that why not question, I think is a great one that will get you at least the creative juices flowing and figuring out how to move forward.
Yeah. I mean, worst case scenario, I get coached or somebody would get coached on how to do something better, or you'll be praised for what you tried and you'll be looked at as somebody who can help other people try it.
Maybe in the last year, I know that tech tools change all the time, and I don't know that your answer will be tech tool specific, but in the last year, what are you most proud of your class accomplishing or attempting?
I would say everything that I've asked them to try. There's a method to Mr. Nessie's madness. When I started in September, I don't start with, hey, we're going to blog and Instagram and, you know, share everything to the world. You have to get them comfortable doing that, especially when you're working with freshman world history students. They, you know, when you come in September, you're still basically a baby eighth grader. So it's a process to get them through the year, working towards the end of the year when I'm doing in the fourth marking period, genius hour, passion project, 20% time learning. They can't start the year with that. I mean, they could, but that would take me being one hell of an educator to start the year right away doing that. So it's building up to that, using different technologies in small ways, and then expanding on how they can do more with a tool, again, like an Adobe Spark or a Padlet or a Google Hangout, or, you know, through the year, bringing in Google Sites as an example. But to hit the ground sprinting out of the gate, the school year is a marathon, not a sprint. So it's that process of getting them, okay, Mr. Nessie's out of his mind, but we're still going to continue to follow him. So they're still with me.
Gotcha. And you touched on it a bit, but I wonder if you could dig in a little more in terms of getting kids comfortable, right, with what you're trying to do. And I heard, you know, it's a little bit of a slow burn in introducing them to the tools at first, but not saying like, this is what it looks like fully implemented or whatever. But I'm just curious, outside of this layered approach and scaffolded approach, what else do you do to get kids comfortable?
The honest answer is, I tell them, you have to do this. You know, it gets to a point where with each tool, you know, the question will be, oh, Mr. Nessie, do we have to show our face? Wait, do I really have to record my voice? And my answer is, yes, you have to do it. You have to try it. So I kind of force them to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like the cruel swim instructor or something. You know, the kid is looking at the pool and afraid of jumping in. But it's just that they need the experience. Listen, you're going to pop back up. You're going to be fine. I'm right here anyways, you know, to take care of you if anything goes wrong. But sometimes they need a little bit of that push. You know, so I think that's what you're providing.
That is the more and better articulated response to your question that you just gave. I just pushed, but they have this net. You know, I'm not going to, you know, hang them out to dry, but I can't expect, and I'll use the swimming example that you just gave. We can't expect to teach a child how to swim by putting them on their bellies in the parking lot. You got to push them in the water.
Wait, how'd you learn to swim? I got to talk to my parents.
You know, sometimes it's almost like tough love a little bit. You know, ultimately we're there. I tell them and I preach to them from, you know, the 1st of September, I am here to help you. I want you to succeed. I want you to do and be the best you can be. And I'm going to support you in any way that I can to make that happen. And that's for all 150 to 160 kids that I work with in a high school.
You know, we talked about failing forward and just a second ago, you know, with the safety net. And so, you know, I love talking to guests about their single worst leadership mistake, but also what did you learn from it? So in your case, what would that be?
I don't know that I've made a bad leadership decision so much as in the leaders that I've worked with, I've seen other leaders make bad choices, which have had a positive influence on me to see what I don't want to do. Have I made mistakes? Absolutely. I've made a ton. I know I'm going to make a lot more, which is one of the ways that I'm able to relate to 15 and 16 year olds because they're chock full of mistakes. But I don't know that I've had a leadership role where I've made the wrong choice as a leader, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, it does. I appreciate that answer. And, you know, sometimes it's just as powerful to, you know, like you said, to observe others. And I was coaching a one-on-one client of mine recently, about a month ago, and there was some frustration she was expressing at her current position. She's an AP, awesome AP. And just like, how do you respond to some of these things, especially when you feel like you're trying to offer suggestions and be a part of the solution, but that's falling on deaf ears, right, of the principal. And I said, well, why not just create an idea journal is what I want you to do and start mapping out, you know, what are these responses and what don't you like about them? How would you do it given the opportunity to lead the school? And do that on a, you know, a daily, just short 5-10 minute reflection strategy. And now too, when you get your first building, part of your 90-day plan might already be created. You have stories, ideas, examples that you can share during the interview process, and you've done some of the work ahead of time, and it's being proactive as opposed to reactive or feeling sorry for yourself as well. So I think the power of observation and just considering, you know, how you might want to try to do things differently is very, yeah, a powerful activity.
Absolutely. And what I can also add is that, you know, if I became a leader today, I could do it. Would I still make mistakes? Sure. I mean, nobody is perfect. But if I had the opportunity 5 or 6 years ago to take on this same fictional leadership opportunity, I most certainly wouldn't have the same rate of success that I think I would now or, you know, in 2 years. And I think that comes down to, you know, lifelong learning and being somebody who is open-minded to continuing to grow and accumulate knowledge and continue to have experiences. So I feel confident that I would succeed.
Yeah, I know you would. You'd be awesome too, by the way. If you decide, and that's a different conversation, but you would be great for sure. So Chris, Tony Robbins is famous for saying that quality questions create a quality life. Successful people ask better questions, and as a result, they get better answers. What's one question you think school leaders should ask more frequently?
That could open a big box of worms, Dan. You sure want me to go there?
Yeah, for sure.
I think more leaders need to ask for help, not because they don't know, but to involve more people in the process. I've seen, whether it's supervisors, superintendents, principals that I've worked with, I always feel a little bit bad because I sometimes feel like they're trying to do it all by themselves. And it's okay to ask for help. Again, I go back to, what are the things we're always asking students to do that we as adults sometimes forget about? You know, asking for help is not a sign of weakness in any way, shape, or form. You know, even the strongest person is going to have a spotter if they go to the gym and they're going to do some bench presses. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
So I think more leaders need to ask for help and involve people in the process of leading the school and where the school is going and shaping, you know, the mission, the vision, the culture, and the climate.
And the thing is, like to your fitness example, if you're lifting and you don't need a spotter, are you lifting the right weight, right?
Right.
Because if it's something that you can do and just bang out 10 reps, 3 sets, 4 sets, 5 sets, whatever, and it's just, yeah, it's easy, easy peasy, as educators might say, like you're not getting stronger. You're staying, you're just maintaining at best. You might be getting weaker, actually.
I would say so.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. So I think that is absolutely true, that leaders need to ask for help too. Is it as easy as just, you know, talking to staff that you have strong relationships with? Is that in the context of the staff meeting? I guess it might depend on what we're actually talking about. So maybe the better question actually would be, what are some effective ways that Chris Nassi has used to ask for help?
I very simply will ask for help. You know, I will go to people who I trust, people who I feel comfortable with. And that doesn't mean I'm going to find people who are just going to yes me to death. I will also, and I have people in my life who challenge me, who, even if I think I've got the greatest idea, they will devil's advocate me. They will question what I'm planning. And actually that starts at home with Mrs. Nessie.
Yep.
You know, she is my biggest supporter.
Awesome.
And my strongest critic, who, I mean, without her, I probably would be digging ditches somewhere.
And the asking for help, was that always a part of your DNA, do you think?
I believe so. And that comes from upbringing. My parents, mm-hmm. both mom and dad, you know, encouraged me to question the world around me. And, you know, if I needed help, they instilled in me not to be afraid to ask. So the idea of not being afraid and seeking help, and, you know, I can't do everything alone. I mean, when I was growing up, and even still now as a 37-year-old, still a huge fan of superheroes, and, you know, Superman is my go-to hero of choice. And as strong as Superman is, even Superman, Justice League movie aside, sometimes needs help and can't do everything alone. So that's, I mean, I'm not as strong as him or, you know, all the powers, but, you know, I know to look for help.
Have a growth mindset, Chris. Not yet. You're not as strong as Superman yet.
Absolutely. Not yet.
You know, without wanting to simplify and generalize it too much, I think, you know, leaders, sometimes they feel not embarrassed. They feel bad though about asking people for help because they feel like that's adding too much to their plate. And so if that's you, listener, I want to challenge you in a couple ways. One of the biggest questions I think that staff people have is, am I doing a good job? Does my quote unquote boss or the leader of my organization, you know, do they see the hard work I'm putting in and that kind of thing? And they might actually get a lot of pleasure and a lot of just great feelings from being able to be a part of a team and help move the organization forward. And so you're actually robbing people the opportunity to get that and experience that if you don't ask for help, right? Another thing to think about too, if you're feeling bad, okay, I'm adding something to their plate, which you are, well, think as a leader, as a obstacle, you know, in terms of removing obstacles, what could I take off their plate if I'm adding this? That's another thing to consider. And then the other thing too, people struggle with, and this gets to the ego of the listeners, you know, they can't do it as good as me, right? Well, maybe that's true. I don't know. First, you got to give them the opportunity. But secondly, if somebody is able to complete whatever that task is and you delegate and they can do it at 80%, it's not as good as your 100. Okay, fine. But how long did that task take? And what could you use that time, you know, repurpose that time for that only you can do based on the position you hold within the school? And so for me, for example, I hired for the first time a VA who's taking care of my social media. She's writing the email that goes out to the tribe when a new podcast gets released. She's creating the blog post and actually uploading the podcast to Libsyn. So all of that, right? So Chris, how long would that process, you think, take for you as a seasoned podcaster? Just the whole upload and then the social promotion and building the blog page. What do you think?
I would say from start to finish, you know, being, you know, now over 4 years into this whole process, you know, episode production might take me from start to finish. I'll guess maybe 4 to 5 hours to, you know, from interviewing a guest, editing the audio, recording it, writing the show notes, all of that to upload, you know, I'd say 4 to 5 hours. And that would be over a 2 week period.
And so take away the actual recording of the show. So for me, this show is typically between 30 minutes and an hour. So that's now down to 3 hours. Editing the show, which used to take me like half hour to an hour, take that out. So now we're down to 2 hours, right? Because that was the first thing I delegated off my plate was audio production. So long story short, uploading the Libsyn, creating the blog post, and then creating the social media for me took between 1 hour and 2 hours, okay? And so I hired Abby, and she's doing an awesome job. And the first time she did it, it took her 4.5 hours. And I'm thinking, oh God, because I'm paying her too, you know? And I'm thinking, man, I could do this in 2 hours, you know, or less. But the thing is she's going to learn it. She's probably going to figure out how to do it better and faster than me. I just have to give her time. I created videos on how to do everything, at least from my point of view, and a document that outlines every single step. Right? So initially it's taken her longer, but now that that's off my plate, I can focus on things that either give me more energy or is going to be better for the Better Leaders, Better Schools brand. So in terms of creating more content or finding school leaders that I can serve, right? Only I can do that. Anybody could create my blog post. And so that goes back to this asking for help and the delegation. And if the only reason you're not delegating is because you think, you know, you could do it better. Well, maybe you could. I don't know that you could, but maybe you could. And even if you could, who cares? Because there's things that you aren't doing. And this is the thing I talk about with school leaders. There's a difference between working on your school versus in it. And that vision, that inspiring stuff, we could tell such great stories as school leaders, right? Get people fired up. And then sometimes those things fizzle out. You never actually make it reality. Why? Because you don't have time to work on it. A, because you're doing all the work. And then B, when you get some free time, are you intentional enough to actually sit down and work on the vision instead of checking Facebook or whatever you're doing to waste time, right? So those are just some of my ideas in terms of asking for help.
Absolutely. And, you know, even if we say yes to quote unquote everything, there are still things that, you know, a leader is going to be saying no to. Even if they think they're saying yes to everything and they're doing everything, there are going to be areas of their life, personal and professional, that will suffer. So, I mean, my approach that I've taken on in the last couple of years has been say and do for a few people what you wish you could do for everybody, you know, and learning to say no. And when I do say yes, it's going to really count and provide not only me meaning and value, but whatever it is that I'm going to be doing will also be able to get even a higher level of my attention and my expertise or my knowledge or whatever skills I'm going to be using. So those are some things that I'm trying to do.
Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. Chris, concerning leadership, education, or technology, what have you changed your mind about in the last few years?
I'm going to think about that a second.
Absolutely.
I've become more adept at knowing what I don't know and wanting to continue to learn as much as I can, whether it's the podcast or what I do in the classroom or presenting. I'm trying to learn to make myself a better person. And the better job that I can do of that, whether it's, you know, learning tech tools, tips, strategies, you know, then I can turn around and I can, you know, spread it around. To borrow from Hello Dolly, manure is worthless unless you're spreading it around. So that's what I'm trying to do. I want to learn and accumulate and share. And that's something that over the last, I'll say, you know, 30 years or so, you know, I'm 37. That's what I'm continuing to learn how to do, is learn and be the best person I can be and make a difference to the people around me.
What's one book you've read in the past year that's really impacted your leadership, your productivity, or quality of life? And why should the Better Leaders read it?
Well, you're talking to a podcaster who is not the most avid or best reader. So is it okay if I recommend a couple of podcasts instead?
Of course. Yeah.
So two podcasts that have really made a big impact on me. First is the 5 a.m. Miracle, hosted by Jeff Sanders. And that is a podcast all about productivity. And it's not so much about waking up at 5 a.m., but whatever your 5 a.m. is, to wake up and make the most of your day, you know, whether it is reading, writing, working on projects, responding to email, just getting the most out of those early hours, exercise, things like that. The second is the Art of Manliness podcast, which, don't be fooled by the title, it is not just for men. Brett McKay from theartofmanliness.com talks to all sorts of interesting people. And I've learned stuff about, you know, barbecuing or making fires, but I've also learned about how dumb George Washington was from what was chronicled and written about George Washington. So those are two podcasts that, again, man or woman, whether you're up early or whatever your life is, there is so much value in both of those podcasts.
And if you could be great at anything in the world, what would it be?
I would want to be a great husband and father. Right now, I'm okay, but I really desire greatness to be the man that my wife needs me to be and to be the father that both my boys need me to be. And I think that that would really translate into everything else, because if we're good at home, if we're good where we put our head, then everything else will take care of itself. So I would love to just be a great father and a great husband.
Is there some type of strategy or resource or tool you use to reflect and evaluate, I guess, on your leadership at home effectiveness, so to speak?
Yes. When she tells me that I'm not doing a good job, that's my reflection. But those are conversations that I have with my wife and even my 5 and 2 year old about, you know, I mean, my 5 year old is not shy to tell me, Daddy, what are you doing? You know, play with me, you know, get off your iPad. My 2 year old knows, Daddy, put the podcast away. So I do get those hints from all three of them. And it's just a matter of now over time becoming a better listener here at home, which I may never be a great husband and father, but I want to continue each day to do that the best that I can. And then everything else that I'm interested in and care about, that'll all take care of itself.
I'm probably scared to do this, which is why I don't. But so you know that I run some of my masterminds, and then I also invest in one personally where I'm a member myself over at View from the Top with Aaron Walker. Well, each week he sends out a questionnaire, and it's categorical. So family, friends, you know, wife, etc. Like, how would you rate this past week's quality or performance, you know, whatever. And so shout out to Keith Harris, because he listens to this podcast, even though he's not in education. He wants to learn leadership tips, but we're connected and good friends. So Keith, if you're listening, love you, brother. He likes to check out this show. So anyways, weekly, we do this evaluation. And well, I always do it on my own. Keith changed the game. He actually does it with his family. So like you said, he sits down with his sons and then with his wife. And he said, I'm thinking about scoring myself a 9 on, marriage. It'll turn to his wife. He said, is that a good score? Am I on? Am I off? And that scares me because I mean, to be quite honest, I don't like conflict, right? And that gets into like family of origin stuff. And it triggers a fear that things aren't good and then the relationship's going to deteriorate, you know, and you're going to be alone, that kind of thing. That's what it triggers. But I think I should start doing that with Miriam, because it'd be proactive. So even if that conversation's uncomfortable, you know, around the dinner table or whatever, hey, how would you rate me in marriage? Like, if we address that right here, current time, as opposed to, you know, a week, a month, months, years, you know, decades, who knows how long it could go. But if you're still making those same mistakes, you know, I think that'd be a good way to address it.
Absolutely. And if people aren't having those conversations in their personal life, they, at some point, because I can't say quickly or slowly, you will find yourself alone if you're not willing to have the tough conversation.
Right.
You know, here at home for us, it's, you know, talking about our future goals, whether it's finance or career, you know, we have the tough conversations. I don't always like what my wife says to me, but I have the utmost respect for her point of view and her perspective. And ultimately, I know whether we're talking about me or we're talking about her, you know, we have each other's best interests at heart. And you got to be able to have those conversations. It's plain and simple. If you don't, you're going to be very sad one day. Not you personally, Daniel, but somebody not having those conversations.
Right. But it could be me too, if I didn't engage in those. So it's true. Chris, outside of school, what do you enjoy doing? And outside of podcasting too, what do you enjoy doing just for yourself?
I don't know anymore that I do anything that's purely just for me, but some of the stuff that I like to do involves doing DIY projects here around the house, tinkering in my garage. You know, it's my home maker space where, you know, I do things like woodworking, watching, you know, YouTube videos with my son about, you know, vacuums or electrical and plumbing. You know, I tell people all the time, if not for YouTube, I would have electrocuted myself long ago.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Or flooded a bathroom or, you know, a basement. But, you know, I like to do hands-on stuff, you know, whether, and it involves making or, you know, maintaining my lawn and doing stuff outside the house, riding my bike, going to play basketball, just things where I can just relax and not think about who's the VIP or, you know, did I grade that assignment? You know, I take time for me and hands-on doing stuff. Those are a lot of the ways that I do that.
What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just a day?
First, I got to say, from being a fan of this podcast, I love this question. And you've had so many different kinds of people, men and women, who have shared all sorts of messages. But I think maybe I'll have something different. I'm pretty sure, because I don't think I'm copying anybody.
Cool.
But my message would be, quote, and this is me saying it, so I'm quoting myself, smile at as many people as possible today and every day. Because I think that more smiles would just simply make the world a better place. So why not start with our students in our schools and teachers around the world smiling more?
Oh, for sure. I'm smiling right now just as you share that quote. So that's a winner for sure. Well, Chris, since you do listen to the show, you know this is the last question. You made it to the end. Thanks so much for being a great guest. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. So how would you build your dream school and what would be your top three priorities?
Priority number one, because I run the House of Ed Tech, would be lightning fast access to the internet and always current devices. Let's not get bogged down by budgetary constraints in my imaginary school, which, by the way, would be Christopher Nessie High School. Nice. Number two would be in this school to have schedules and courses that allow the students to take more control of their learning. You know, we have kids in school who they have an idea of what they want to be and what problems in the world they want to solve. In this school, we would put every opportunity in front of each student to go out and do that. You know, if a kindergartner wants to grow up and be a police officer, hey, let's give them everything they want to learn about being in law enforcement until they decide they don't want to do that. And then we're going to readjust and give them what they need to do what they want to do. And then the third thing would be a culture and a climate where all stakeholders, administrators, teachers, students, everybody feels empowered and entrusted to do what is best for not only the students, but for everybody involved in this school. I really think that the human element of schools is endangered, and too many people in too many places forget that, you know, whether you're admin, faculty, students, custodial staff, we're all people, we're all humans, and we need to do a better job of navigating those waters of just realizing I'm people, you're people, and let's do what we need to do to be successful.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
My parting advice, have no fear. Don't be afraid to try. The worst thing that happens is you will learn something. The best thing that happens is you will also learn something. For people who want to connect with me, you can connect on Twitter. My username is Mr. Nessie, and that's M-R-N-E-S-I. Feel free to email me, mr@chrisnessie.com. And I would love it if you enjoyed this podcast and you want more of a tech spin and another high quality production, please go and check out both the House of Ed Tech podcast and also Podcast PD, which you can find at podcastpd.com.
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Chris. Head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Chris in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources like those two podcasts Chris just mentioned, and the best way to connect. Chris, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better. Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.